I'm very happy now to welcome Rebecca Roberts-Wolf. Her short film is called Cast in Sand, A Tale of Two Women. It screens tonight at 7 o'clock at the Screen, one night only. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So this is about two women from Western Sahara, and they've lived for decades in a refugee camp. Western Sahara, I learned from your film, has been occupied by Morocco since the 1970s and has been kind of a disputed territory for longer than that. What is going on there?
So it's obviously a long and complicated history. I'm going to try and make it as short as possible. When all of Africa was colonized by Europe, Western Sahara was called Spanish Sahara. It was the only significant Spanish colony in Africa. And basically, when Spain pulled out, Morocco invaded, and it was with the agreement of Spain. They made an agreement. And Morocco invaded very violently and killed a lot of people, and a lot of people fled and ended up finding safe haven over the border in Algeria. And that was in 1975. So these are some of the oldest refugee camps in the world. This is now the 40th anniversary of the founding of these refugee camps. And generations have been born in the refugee camps. Some of the population still lives inside of occupied Western Sahara, and it's a pretty oppressive occupation, very little freedom of expression or freedom of media. People are regularly detained and often disappeared for just for saying, this is Western Sahara, it's not Morocco. It's very little known about, obviously.
Yeah. But
you know, it's one of the world's many conflicts, but it's really an important one and a significant one.
Now, how did you find yourself going there, getting involved in this whole story and making a film?
So, also a long story, and I'll try to make it short. When I was in college, I studied abroad in West Africa, in Senegal. And after my classes ended, I was traveling on a train in Mauritania, which is just north of Senegal. And so at that point, I was less than 100 miles from the border with Western Sahara, and I knew nothing about Western Sahara. I'd never heard of it. And I met two Sahrawis, two people from Western Sahara, on this train. We all became friends. We ended up traveling together. I went with them to sort of a freedom festival, a three-day protest celebration combined in what's called the Liberated Territory, the small area of Western Sahara that's not occupied by Morocco. I met many Sahrawis, and I was really welcomed like family, but in a very genuine way. And I was shocked that I'd never heard of this. I heard so many stories, and everyone I met said, when you go home, please tell people in your country about our situation. Tell them about our struggle. And, you know, of course, when somebody says that to me, what could I say but yes? And then, yeah. You know, when I left, I felt like, oh, I actually have to do that. So it took me several years to figure out how to start telling that story, but eventually the project evolved into a film.
Tell us about the two women in your film. The older one is called Agaila, the younger, 24, who was born in the refugee camp, Najla. How did you select these two women? Who are they?
I selected them sort of by happenstance. I got lucky. Najla was originally introduced to me as my translator. So in order to get permission to go to the refugee camps, you have to go through sort of a rigorous screening process because Morocco creates a lot of propaganda. Morocco has a lot of money invested in this issue because they're making a lot of money off of Western Sahara. So there have been people who have in the past been sent to the refugee camps supposedly to make a film about something, and it actually turns into a film about something else, and footage is manipulated and really turned into lies to be propaganda for the Moroccan position. And so you're sort of vetted by the people who administer the camps before you can get a visa to go there. So I had connections already. I had friends and people who vouched for me. And so they knew I was coming, and they knew I was making a film about two women. And so they introduced me to a young woman who spoke English to be my translator. And I didn't know until the end of my first production trip that she was going to be one of the women who was featured in the film. But she right away introduced me to her elderly neighbor, who she said is one of the women she admires most in the world, this amazing medicine woman. And, you know, clearly Agaila was the woman that we wanted to concentrate on for the elder generation, the generation who had been involved in founding the refugee camps. And, you know, towards the end of our trip, we still hadn't found a young woman that we liked, but Najla was clearly perfect, and I'd been shy about asking her, but I finally did, and she was happy to do it.
Now, Agaila suffered tremendous losses, which she described in the film as she and her family had to flee their homes.
Yes, she did. Her story is not unique. Pretty much everyone of her generation, a generation older, a generation younger, has similar stories. I'll describe briefly the way she describes it in the film as just one example of this time period. So when Morocco invaded, her husband was her husband became a soldier in the war after Morocco invaded, and he describes that the Moroccan king said, he drew a line in the sand in Western Sahara, and he said, everything north of this line, you drive it into Western Sahara, you don't let it leave, whether it's a human or whatever. Everything south of this line, you kill. Doesn't matter if it's a human, it's a camel, it's a goat, anything you see that moves, you kill it. And so there was, you know, tremendous violence, and obviously everyone was, you know, terrified and fleeing for their lives. And Agaila was one of these people. She said she fled at night. She carried her daughter on her back. You know, she had five young children at the time. She carried a water skin and whatever food she could put on her head, and that was what they left with. And they would flee at night. They would walk at night, not knowing how far they were going to have to go, and they would stop during the day to hide. And whenever they thought they had reached a safe place, they would be bombed again, whatever it was. And finally, the men who had joined the army had negotiated a deal with Algeria to have safe haven over the border in Algeria. So when they finally had crossed this line in the sand, they were safe, and they were told that they could stop. And they had nothing. So originally, you know, at the beginning, they... the only shelter they had was their dresses from this very intense sun. You know, it's very, very hot area of the world and very barren. No water on the surface that's accessible. So it was a very difficult start.
Najla, the younger woman whom you portray in the film, highly intelligent, very ambitious, and actually the screening tonight is partly a fundraiser to raise money so that she can get an education. What are the prospects for education for people in these refugee camps in Western Sahara, or over the border of Western Sahara?
So in the refugee camps, which are in this corner of Algeria, over the 40 years, you know, they've actually built up a really amazing education system, and actually many people from the region send their kids to the refugee camps to get educated because it's, you know, it's the best in that very localized region there. But they don't have education, they don't have high school or anything beyond high school. And so kids, you know, it's been a major focus of the resistance movement to educate their children. And so most children want to go beyond, you know, what we would call middle school and continue through secondary and through college. And so they have to go either to Algiers or to various other places to go to high school, and then the same for college, often abroad for college. With all of those restrictions, obviously there are many young people who don't end up having that opportunity. So Najla did have to drop out of high school after her first year. She had some family issues. She was needed at home, and so she wasn't able to be so far away. But she took up her studies again in her mid-20s, and she's now 26. She's about to complete her GED. She had another American friend who helped her enroll in an online GED program, and it was very challenging. She had to go abroad, actually, just to get enough internet connection to do that program. But she's almost finished with it, and now a small team of us has come together to help her with her campaign to try to get to the U.S. for college. So she's been accepted to a small college in Bellingham, Washington. And basically now, in order to have a chance for a visa, she needs to raise a certain amount of money and have that in a bank account to be able to show the U.S. government that she can pay for her education. So that's what we're trying to do now, is help her raise that money.
What are her plans and hopes? Do you know?
I do, yeah. We talk about it a lot. You know, like most young people, there's sort of a wide variety of options before her, and she's excited about many of them. She's very skilled with languages. She speaks four languages fluently, Arabic, Spanish, English, and German. and she's learning other languages as well. She's thought about being an interpreter or a translator. But really her passion is working for her people and her people's cause. And so she's most likely going to study something related to political science or international policy. And she would like to go back to the camps and work from there after her education. She may end up teaching English inside the camps for a while, but she's becoming sort of a spokesperson. You know, she's not only in my film, she's also in several other films. She's often attending conferences. So far it's been mostly youth conferences, but also women's conferences in different countries, you know, in other parts of Africa and in the Middle East. And so I really see her continuing that career sort of as a diplomat and a spokesperson.
Does your having made this film give you, like, put you on some kind of list in Morocco?
I don't know for sure. Maybe. I haven't tried to travel to Morocco, and I'm not going to try anytime soon. One of my, you know, absolutes in being involved in this project is that I never considered doing anything that I felt would endanger my safety. And so I haven't been to the occupied territory of Western Sahara, which is controlled by Morocco. There are other documentary films that have been made there, and they're very important because they show what the situation is like inside. But almost always there's a component in one of those films where either the filmmaker or the Sahrawi person helping the filmmaker gets detained or beaten or something bad happens to them. And so I'm not going to try to go to Morocco anytime soon. I honestly don't know. It might not be a problem for me to go to, for example, Casablanca or one of the main cities within, you know, non-disputed Morocco. I'm probably on some sort of list, yes.
Rebecca Roberts-Wolf is a filmmaker. Her short film is called Cast in Sand, A Tale of Two Women. It screens tonight at 7 o'clock at the Screen on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. It's one night only. You will be there. And proceeds go to Najla's Education Fund. So are you touring around with this film?
I have toured with the film. Last year it went to 10 film festivals, and I went to many of those. Now we're focusing more on the longer version of the film. It's turning into a feature-length film, and we're going to be focusing more on Najla and her educational journey. So most of our energy is going into that now, but we are doing special events like this one for specific purposes.
Rebecca Roberts-Wolf, thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.